Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation. The Canadian Crippler, the Rabid Wolverine. That's what fans called Chris Benoit during his very successful career in professional wrestling. But in June of 2007, Benoit shook wrestling forever by committing a double murder-suicide in his own home. What drove Benoit to kill his entire family? What impact does this still have on athletes today? This is True Crime Cast.
Hello, hello, and welcome back once again to True Crime Cast. You're here with Jamie and John, as always. What's good, John?
Well, Jamie, I think we ought to talk about a sports update, as we often do. I know you're rolling your eyes, but, man, it was a big day today.
I hate you so much.
Tennessee won against the number one team in the nation in basketball, Kentucky. How'd they do this weekend?
Say the number one team's name, John.
Gonzaga.
Well done.
Yeah.
Kentucky didn't win yesterday. I thought we were done with this after football season was over, but
well, in a weird twist of fate, Tennessee has become a basketball school and Kentucky has become a football school. Perhaps in 2019, the world will straighten itself out and we can get back to normal.
I would be perfectly happy with that. I just want to say thanks to you guys for the additional shares online, for the reviews and ratings. Those continue to grow. We've also had a lot of growth on Patreon recently. Since our last recording, we have had Nasa, Colin, Natalie, Sheila, Rhiannon, and Brittany join our Patreon community, with Rhiannon jumping out at the highest level that we've had yet, and she will be receiving a one of our mugs as part of as her tier of contribution on Patreon. Natalie also came in at our $20 level, and John, what does that get her?
So she got to pick a episode for us to research and to cover. So that episode will be coming out in the next few weeks, so we look forward to getting that out on the air. I'd like to point out Michael won a free mug for being a Patreon member. We selected someone to win a free mug, and Michael is the lucky participant who will receive that in the mail in the next week or so.
We also gave a mug out on social media, and Alex was the winner of that random draw. So congratulations to you that got the free mugs. John and I love ours. If you're interested in getting a mug, we're trying to find a way to sell them. We're looking for the right venue to do that. In the meantime, if you wanted to jump up to our $25 level on Patreon, you will receive a mug as well as a signed photograph. So there are a lot of things that come in that level. So we encourage you to look at that if a mug is something you're interested in.
It's been really cool doing the giveaways. It's Christmas time and it's the season of giving. So we're happy to give those to you guys. You ought to think about joining our Patreon. It's a lot of fun. We'll have a new episode that drops every month at the beginning of the month. And those are always a blast to record and to listen to. So I'm sure you would enjoy those.
The one that came out last week actually came with a slew of updates from previous cases that we've covered. We talked about Stephen Avery. We talked about Haman Lee, Tara Grinstead, the Roden family murders. So there are updates on all those cases on our Patreon episode, in addition to another case that was pretty fascinating, I believe.
If you can't join our Patreon right now, we totally understand. One of the biggest ways you can help the show that is totally free and just takes a few minutes of your time is to leave a rating and review on iTunes. That helps other listeners find the show, and it's a great way to help support us. So, Jamie, I know that you are stoked to talk about the case we're going to be talking about tonight, not because of some of the awfulness that happens in it, but it's about your favorite subject, and that is wrestling. Or should we say wrestling?
Wrestling.
Wrestling.
You're saying it wrong.
Whatever. Well, it's fake.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm perfectly fine with that. I'm an adult, John. Come on.
I saw the tear in your eye.
Yeah, so several months ago, maybe even a year or so ago, one of our very first requested cases came from a young man named Jacob, who I'm not even sure was alive when this happened. He walked up to us and saw us in public and said, "I heard you guys are doing a crime podcast. You need to cover the case of Chris Benoit, who's a professional wrestler. We're going to talk about some about his career, but then get into the end of his life, which came with him committing murder against everyone in his household and then ending his own life. And it's a very sad, tragic story, and it has implications that go beyond, really beyond his life into, and beyond wrestling, into the overall sports world that we'll talk about toward the end of the episode. I find it interesting, John, that you, I don't know, I felt some sarcasm when you were talking about wrestling, and I feel like we are both from very secluded rural areas. I feel like we each have our own brand of redneck, though. I like wrestling, and you like NASCAR, but neither of us like both. Isn't that weird to you?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I watched a little bit of wrestling, but not as much as you did, for sure. I really enjoyed Stone Cold Steve Austin. I liked The Rock. But yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a, if it was on TV and I didn't have anything else to do and NASCAR wasn't on, then sure, I'd watch it for a few minutes.
I'm going to tell you a real life story. I don't know the exact date. I have it written down, though. I can find it.
In your diary?
Something like that. When I was in high school, my favorite wrestler was Ric Flair.
Okay.
And my sophomore year of high school, he quote-unquote had a heart attack in the ring on Monday Nitro, because he was in WCW at the time. And I happened to get strep that week, and I didn't go to school the next day. Legitimately sick. I came back to school a few days later, and everybody was like, dude, you really took that Ric Flair news hard. You haven't been to school in 3 days. Did you go check on him? Yeah. But I remember that distinctly, of people really thinking that's why I missed school.
I remember the Sunday that Dale Earnhardt died. The next day, me and my buddies were talking about it. And I swear, as middle schoolers, we were crying in the cafeteria talking about the tragic news from that day. So, yeah, we're redneck nerds, I think, is the bottom line. But, Jamie, you have took the lead on this case, so why don't you get the ball rolling for us?
All right, man. Yeah, we're going to talk about Chris Benoit, start out with some of his early life. He was born on May 21st of 1967 in Canada, in Montreal and Quebec. Unlike a lot of wrestlers, he actually went by his real name. His actual name is Christopher Benoit. A lot of wrestlers, if you look them up, you'll find that they go by pseudonyms, a lot like some actors and musicians do. It just sounds better, rolls off the tongue if you're going to be famous. He wanted to be a wrestler, John, from the time he was 12 years old. He went and saw a live event in Canada starring a guy who would become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time, Bret the Hitman Hart, and another guy named Chris Billington, whose nickname was the Dynamite Kid. Interesting enough, John, as we were preparing for this episode, the week before this is released, the Dynamite Kid actually passed away. So that's of note. But he went and saw them wrestle live when he was 12. He made his mind up that day that he wanted to be a professional wrestler. And he actually started training when he was just 15 years old to go into the industry of professional wrestling.
Jamie, it said that he would drive 3 hours away to Calgary, Alberta, Canada, for training with Stu Hart. Now, Jamie, I feel bad that I'm even taking this section, because you certainly know who Stu Hart is. Do you want to just give us a little backstory on him?
Stu Hart is, well, he's the father of Bret the Hitman Hart and Owen Hart, both who were very famous wrestlers. And he was a wrestler himself, but he was also known, or better known, I should say, for being a trainer. He ran a facility in his mansion, and it was referred to as the Hart Dungeon. And that's where people from all around would go to get hardcore training to prepare for a career as a wrestler. And, I mean, it was so famous. I mean, Benoit was driving 3 hours each way to be trained by Stu Hart. There are a lot of top stars of names you may know if you've ever watched wrestling. Superstar Billy Graham, if you want to go really, really far back. No, he's
the Reverend?
He's not the evangelist, Billy Graham. Wrestler known as Edge, Jake the Snake Roberts, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Mark Henry, Christian, the British Bulldog, the Junkyard Dog, and probably the most notable one that still wrestles, although he's pretty old, is Chris Jericho. So a lot of big names went through the Hart Dungeon to become professional wrestlers.
Jamie, I know this was my section, but when I read that, I was like, I know he wants to talk about that, so I'm going to let you have that one. So.
Much appreciated.
There you go. Jamie, he was really only focused on wrestling, and he really didn't consider any other career options. And I think it's interesting that at 12 years old, he knew what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. I know 20-year-olds in college that haven't figured that out. So he was definitely passionate about wrestling, and I think it's pretty incredible that he stuck with it for all those years and trained so hard. He actually began his career in 1985 when he was 18 years old in the Stampede Wrestling, which was a Canadian company that was ran by Stu Hart. He was very sound technically in his wrestling. He was actually one of the best of all time in that respect.
He was known for being very sound, John, and very technical. He was also a big risk taker. One of his primary finishing moves was actually a diving headbutt off of the top rope, where he would go completely horizontal, put his arms down at his sides, and just land on somebody with his head. Some of these risks are going to come back into our conversation a little later. His other finisher was called the Crippler Crossface. We'll talk about how he got the nickname of the Crippler here in a little bit. His first nickname actually was the Pegasus Kid, and he really modeled himself after the Dynamite Kid. But later in his career, he would go back to just being Chris Benoit. He went on to spend some time in Japan with the New Japan Pro Wrestling Organization. Outside of North America, I mean, wrestling is huge in the United States. It's really big in Canada. It's also humongous in Mexico. Outside of those three countries, Japan's really where it's at if you want to be a professional wrestler. So a lot of guys that you'll see even now spent a lot of time in Japan. Benoit bounced around a lot in the 90s. He wrestled some in World Championship Wrestling, which is WCW, which was one of the more prominent organizations in the 90s. He spent a couple of years in ECW, which is the Extreme Championship Wrestling. And what set that organization apart is that they really didn't have any rules, so people used a lot of weapons there, so it was pretty violent. He spent some more time in Japan. He wrestled some in Mexico. I mentioned his nickname earlier, the Crippler. While he was in ECW, he was wrestling a guy named Sabu. And during that match, Sabu actually broke his neck. And as a promotion, one of the announcers started calling him the Crippler since he had broken someone's neck. Now, you mentioned that it was fake, John. A lot of times when you're watching wrestling, the person who is having the move performed on them, as it would seem, is actually in complete control of what's happening. So Sabu really broke his own neck. But Benoit was the one in the ring with them, so he got quote-unquote credit for that. Benoit also had the nickname of the Rabid Wolverine. He looked kind of, I don't know, he had a mean look in his eye. He was missing a tooth, which some attributed to coming from a fight. It actually, he lost his tooth playing with his dog. His dog headbutted him in the mouth, but it made him look tough, so he never replaced it. In 1995 is when he went back to WCW and started wrestling under his own name. He was approached by the booking staff, and those are people who write the storylines. They're writing the scripts of who's supposed to win, who's supposed to say what. They wanted to join the Four Horsemen with Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Flying Brian Pillman. Four Horsemen was a group of wrestlers. I mean, they have tag teams, then they have bigger groups. Four Horsemen was a big one, the NWO, D-Generation X, if you've ever been a wrestling fan. His toughness and technical ability made it clear that he was going to be a wrestler that was around WCW for a while, and they wanted to put him in with this popular group to help to establish him early. He did get injured a lot, like I mentioned. He took a lot of risks, but he considered it a badge of honor to wrestle through the pain, to wrestle through injury, whether it was a pulled muscle or even a concussion.
Yeah, man, and concussions were obviously a problem for Benoit, and I'm sure other wrestlers as well. In almost every match, he dove headfirst onto his opponents, and he would actually land on their shoulders most of the time, but he didn't brace himself, so it would still lead to concussions a lot of times. At that time, it was a regular occurrence for wrestlers to hit each other with chairs on the head, and if you watch wrestling today, you will not see that, and that's largely in part to the fallout that Benoit's actions are going to happen later on in the story, so you'll understand why as we go along. Benoit was known for being one of the only wrestlers that would agree to take a chair shot to the back of the head, which was oftentimes more likely to cause a concussion. Jamie, you mentioned that he would often wrestle hurt. One way to aid in that and to continue looking ripped all the time is to use steroids. Now, steroids ran rampant in wrestling in the 1980s and 90s. Unfortunately, it was also common in other sports as well. Once World Wrestling Entertainment, which is the WWE and WWF at that time, the owner coined the term sports entertainment and admitted that it was not actual competition, so sporting laws no longer applied to wrestlers. So they did steroids, and yes, they did steroid tests, but they were not taken seriously, and they were often faked. Chris Benoit was on steroids for his entire career, and never had a single positive test. I mean, how in the world does that happen?
Well, I mean, they had the test to say that they had testing, but ultimately the tests were easy to get around. You would use someone else's urine. You would take the test at a time when you knew you were clean right before you used again. Like, there were a lot of ways to get around these tests. And we saw that in other sports. I mean, you mentioned it happened in other sports. I know you're not a huge baseball guy, but it put baseball back on the map. Baseball is falling out of popularity. And then all of a sudden, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa have this home run race where they're both hitting home runs seemingly with toothpicks. And then Barry Bonds comes behind them and breaks their records. Like, home runs were bananas. And that was all because of steroids.
We would play baseball games in the gym in middle school, and we would all pretend to be Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, and we had our own home run competition those years and tried to hit the most. We were not on steroids as middle schoolers. We were just country strong.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, man. Part of the reason they took these was to keep working. Wrestlers made pretty good money, but they had to pay for their own insurance. And if they were hurt a lot, they were less likely to get renewed contracts. And it's crazy that they were expected to perform like this, John, because wrestling has no off season. Yes, the outcomes are predetermined. They know who's going to win the match. They know a lot of times what move is going to happen when. But there's some really physical stuff happening out there. They'd be on the road working for 365 days a year. They rarely get days off. I know they're only on TV like once a week, but they're wrestling on those off days. My son's really gotten wrestling the past few years. We've been to three or four events that were not televised, and they happen almost every night. Those are called house shows. And basically, it's a wrestling event without the interviews. They still do all the matches. Most of the superstars are there. It's still the same physical kind of stuff. So basically, their schedule, the expected performance, it was set up for them to abuse their bodies and their minds to put on a show for fans. It was a horrible situation. But people who were in the industry, John, just loved it and wanted to do it forever. So they continued to put themselves through this.
Benoit was married in the 1990s, but his marriage with his first wife, Martina, ended in 1997. Jamie, around that time, perhaps by coincidence, perhaps not, he was given a new angle in the WCW. That was a feud with Kevin Sullivan, who was an older wrestler, and he was also a writer for the WCW. Now, his group, the Dungeon of Doom, was in a feud with the Four Horsemen, and Sullivan and Benoit became rivals. Sullivan came up with the idea for Benoit to steal his wife and valet, Nancy Sullivan, and her performance name at the time was Woman. I feel like that is just such a sexist thing to say, but I don't know. We're talking about the 90s.
Even in the 90s, I think that's pretty bad. She had a number of names, but at the time she was just called Woman.
I'm reading this, and I asked Jamie off the air. I was like, did they call her the woman or the woman? No, just woman.
Here so, comes woman.
Woman. Okay, anyway. Valets they used to wear scandalous clothing, and they would help the wrestlers cheat to win through distractions and interference. I remember seeing that a lot. That was a pretty neat thing to see in wrestling. So Benoit and Woman started spending time together in and out of the ring. But also, and this is probably not something that his partner would like, but or his rival would like, but they would shoot promos in hotel rooms backstage. And eventually, Jamie, they fell in love. And obviously, this did not set over well with Kevin Sullivan. And in the early 2000s, Sullivan was promoted to head writer for WCW. And Chris Benoit, along with his best friends, Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko, left and went to the WWF.
Yeah, John, they were really trying to sell the fact that the two of them were falling in love, so they had to spend so much time together that they eventually did. And how much would you regret being the one whose idea it was for your wife to pretend to cheat on you with somebody she ended up marrying? Like, how do you live with that?
Yeah, I mean, you would be pissed off on one hand, and on the other, you're pissed off at yourself because you should have saw this coming. I mean, you don't. Guys are guys, and you don't put other guys in that situation and expect good things to happen.
Benoit and Sullivan were married on November 23rd of the year 2000, which was actually several months after their son Daniel was born. He was born back in February of 2000. There are a lot of rumors out there, John, about the physical condition of their son Daniel. Some say he had a genetic disorder that led to some of the things we'll talk about later and problems in their home, but Based on any information that we can find and information from the family, he really was a healthy kid, and there was nothing to be concerned about. In 2003, things weren't going well in their marriage. Nancy Sullivan, now Benoit, Nancy Benoit filed for divorce, saying that she was the victim of cruel treatment. Although she never mentioned physical abuse, she claimed that he would get angry and he would break and throw furniture in their home when he got upset. We talk a lot about roid rage, and a lot of people will pin this entire case on that. And while I'm not convinced that's what happened later on, I think this could have been happening here, where he would just lose his mind and start breaking stuff. As many steroids as these guys were on, you had to think that they were out of control of their I don't want to let them off the hook by saying out of control, but they were so amped up on the steroids that their actions reflected their abuse of those drugs. She would later drop the suit, and she dropped the restraining order she had against Benoit. Meanwhile, he was having a really successful career in the WWF. As you mentioned, it's now called the WWE. If we want to get into it very briefly, they were sued by the World Wildlife Foundation for stealing their acronym, so they changed it to World Wrestling Entertainment. It doesn't flow quite as easy as WWF, but whatever. Chris Benoit, before it was all said and done, he had been a world heavyweight champion in multiple organizations, tag team champion, United States champion, Intercontinental champion, World Television champion, and Royal Rumble winner. He was actually one of only two people to win the Royal Rumble, being the first person in the ring. The Royal Rumble is when 30 people get in the ring, and the last person to not be thrown over the top rope wins. Beginning in 2001, the WWE actually bought out all of their competition. They bought WCW, they bought ECW, so they pretty much had a monopoly in wrestling. Benoit continued in their various brands, Raw, SmackDown Live, and ultimately back in ECW. In 2007, in the middle of a storyline, that was the last storyline he would be a part of, that would lead him to becoming the World Heavyweight Champion of ECW for another time. During this time, he had several friends and colleagues that passed away. Most notably was a guy you mentioned earlier, and that was Eddie Guerrero, who died in 2005 from cardiac arrest. That had a profound impact on Benoit, who sought counseling after Guerrero's death. He actually started journaling, writing letters to everyone in his life in that journal. And some say that he was never the same after Eddie died. He had his final wrestling match against Elijah Burke on June 19th, 2007, in a qualifier to battle for the championship the following weekend at a pay-per-view called Vengeance.
We now know that he would never make that match. This would be the weekend where Chris Benoit would kill his family and himself. The fact that there was a problem became apparent early in the weekend. At 3:30 on Saturday, on June 23rd, he called Chavo Guerrero, the nephew of Eddie, and left a voicemail that he had missed his flight and would be late for a house show later that night. Jamie, at 3:44, they talked on the phone, and Benoit told Chavo that Nancy and David were sick from food poisoning, and he was taking care of them. Chavo would say that Benoit did not sound like himself, and he went out of his way to say, "I love you," before he got off the phone. Between 3:51 and 3:58 a.m. on Sunday morning, Benoit sent out five odd text messages with his address, stating that his dogs were in the enclosed area behind his house, and also noting that the back door was open. Now, some of those texts were from his phone, and some of those were from Nancy's phone. Later that day, he called a WWE executive to tell him that he would be late for the pay-per-view fight that night, because he was at the hospital with his son, who was throwing up blood. Now, Jamie, he never showed up at the pay-per-view event there in Houston that night, and he was ultimately replaced in the match, and rumors, of course, started to just swirl about what was actually going on. The next day, Chavo and others told WWE executives about the weird text messages, so they called 911 in Atlanta and had a welfare check done at Benoit's house, where authorities found everyone in the home dead.
I know we play a lot of 911 calls, and you can look this one up, but it's very, I was telling John off the air, it's very businesslike. It's an executive calling to do a welfare check. There's not a lot of emotion or information in there, so feel free to look that up. when authorities finally arrived on scene, they found a really gruesome set of circumstances. Nancy was found in the bedroom upstairs. Her hands and feet were bound together. She was wrapped in a towel and had some blood under her head. The autopsy showed that it seemed as though Benoit had held her down from behind and placed his knee in the middle of her back while he strangled her with a cord of some kind. It was determined that she had hydrocodone, hydromorphine, and Xanax in her system. Although these were not at toxic levels, these were medications she had been prescribed, and they were at treatment levels as they were supposed to be, but still a lot of different drugs. There was also a Bible found next to her body. They then found his 7-year-old son, Daniel, dead on his own bed in his bedroom. He was found to have large amounts of Xanax in his system, and investigators believe that he was asleep, and the Xanax had kept him unconscious while he was suffocated. He had internal neck injuries, but no outside bruising. Some speculated that he had been choked, potentially with Benoit's arms instead of his hands wrapped around his neck. He also had a Bible found near his body.
Chris Benoit was also found dead. He had a large amount of weight on a machine that was used for lat pulls. He had put a towel around his neck and wrapped the cord around this machine around the towel. And when the weight was dropped, it hanged him, and he died pretty much instantly. Jamie, you mentioned the toxicology results. He also had hydrocodone, hydromorphine, and Xanax, and testosterone in his system. There was a very large amount of testosterone. He had been taking this to recover from the testosterone his body had lost during his steroid abuse. Now, he was found, or it was later found, that his doctor was prescribing him a 10-month supply of steroids every 4 weeks. Jamie, there was no suicide note on the scene, but in a Bible kept with his belongings, his ex-wife found a note that read, "I am preparing to leave this earth." It was also discovered that he had searched on his computer for the quickest and easiest way to break a neck.
John, this was an awful scene, and people speculated a lot about what actually happened. And there's some other weird circumstances around this. 14 hours before they discovered any of the bodies, before police arrived on scene, the Wikipedia post around Chris Benoit changed to say that he was a no-show at vengeance due to the death of his wife. Now, we believe that she died on Friday, that Daniel was killed early Saturday morning, and then Benoit took his own life on Sunday, and they were all found on Monday. And this is all speculated based on their levels of decay and such. But the Wikipedia post happened in the early hours of Monday morning or late Sunday night. And people started freaking out about it. People were saying there was a conspiracy, that individuals had known what had happened but weren't releasing it, or that someone else was behind it. Ultimately, when he didn't show up at the pay-per-view, people just started making up rumors, and some knucklehead teenager went on and put one of the rumors on Wikipedia. And that was thoroughly investigated, and that's what authorities were convinced of what happened. The WWE responded in a variety of ways. Their initial response was to pay tribute. They knew that Benoit and his family was found dead, but they didn't know the details at the time. So this all happened on a Monday. Monday Night Raw was one of their bigger shows. They canceled the entire show and had a full tribute to him. Now, it's speculated that during the middle of that show, and you can go back and watch it, that people started to realize that he was the one who committed the murders, and they started to back off of their compliments and that kind of thing. They immediately reversed course once they confirmed what had happened. They removed Chris Benoit's name from everything. He's not in the Wrestling Hall of Fame. He's not in any of their title records. In case you don't know, right now, most of wrestling is consumed via the WWE Network, which is an app or a website you can go to and pay $10 a month, and you pretty much get access to every match ever on there. And that's where you watch the pay-per-views now as well. But If you go on there, you cannot search Chris Benoit. If you find a match that he's in, for example, if you watch a random episode of Raw, you can scan through and it'll tell you who's wrestling, if it's for a belt or whatever. But for example, on his last match, I pulled that up and watched it last week, and all it says is Elijah Burke in action. It does not mention Chris Benoit's name anywhere on the WWE network. This also caused the WWE to completely change their wellness policies. They have stronger steroid rules and testing. And some of me thinks that you can tell that by the way the guys look, because they were just so gigantic and ripped in the 90s. And there are some gigantic guys and some ripped guys still, but I think it's more rare that you see guys looking as bulky and all the veins that you saw in the 90s. They no longer allow chairs to the head. If you see somebody hit with a chair in wrestling now, it's a chair to the back. And they're much tighter on wrestling with injuries. They want to prolong the careers of their superstars, so they're much more strict on you taking time off if you get hurt. And some would say this was their shift from the Attitude Era, which, I don't know, I've tried to watch some of that with my son, and it's, I would say PG-13 is generous for some of the stuff that Degeneration X did on the USA Network and the late 90s, but a lot of wrestling is more family-friendly now, and some believe that was to earn back viewers they may have lost when some of their practices were exposed after the Benoit incident.
So, Jamie, we can kind of end this episode by talking, I guess, about the different motives that have been suggested or maybe even speculate on our own end as what we think may be the motive behind Chris Benoit murdering his family and ultimately ending his own life. One of the things that you mentioned early on in this episode was that perhaps this was all a roid rage incident. I mean, I guess I just want to hear your thoughts on what you think about that.
Well, he was certainly on steroids, and he was on them for a long time, and even at the time of his death, he was not slowing down. But this seemed very planned out. It seemed like he had killed his wife, and maybe he did kill his wife, and maybe they got in an argument and he got angry and did it. But then to plan out the way that he would kill his son, to get Xanax in his system and then suffocate him, and then to plan out his own death, it all just seemed way too thorough to be a rage incident, in my opinion. I don't know. But I don't buy that was the entire picture, that it was just based on his steroid use.
Yeah. I could see how an argument would have started off with his wife because of maybe some roid rage that he had, but to go on to kill his son and himself, it seems like there's a little bit more to that story than just an incident of getting extremely upset and out of control. Like you said, I think the killing of his son happened the day after he had killed his wife. So all this stuff did not take place in one setting, or in one amount of time. So I don't think you could pinpoint that on a moment of roid rage. What other theories are out there?
The main one that I ascribe to is the brain damage angle. Once they started analyzing Benoit's body, John, they found that his brain was so damaged from concussions, they said that it looked like an 85-year-old dementia patient. 85-year-old person with dementia, meaning they're kind of losing their mental faculties anyway. Because of all the concussions, some have brought up CTE. You think about football players like Junior Seau and Steve McNair that have taken their lives and that kind of thing. So, it seems like his brain, we have evidence that his brain was in really bad shape. So I tend to put a lot of the reasoning there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, modern science and research has shown the correlation between brain injuries and concussions and then, you know, these awful things that happen, like killing yourself, kind of losing it. So I definitely think that this would come into play, especially when you said the results of his brain test looked like an 85-year-old patient with dementia. I mean, that just speaks volumes as to what was going on with his brain at the time. That's so horrible to hear.
And he was 40. He was 40 years old at the time this happened. I don't have this in our outline, John. The autopsy also actually showed that his heart was almost twice as big as it was supposed to be. And a lot of that had to do just to his drug use over time. And doctors would say that had this incident not happened, he would have been dead within a year anyway. We don't know that he was given this news, but we do know that he was already susceptible to depression based on his reaction to Eddie Guerrero's death. So in my mind, I think the brain damage was a key piece. I do think he was suffering with a lot of depression. He had suffered a lot of loss in his life in the previous years. I think this is a horrible mixture of things to put into one person who is physically capable of doing this much damage. So I'm not quite sure if we can put it on just one thing. I mean, I guess it's good that this caused the WWE to change a lot of their practices. It does seem like their athletes are in a better situation to stay healthy for longer, but do you think the WWE has any responsibility here since their policies and practices kind of pushed Benoit to do these things to himself?
I don't know, man. I think hindsight is often 20/20, so I don't think that – I think they would be responsible had they known what their policies were going to lead to, but I don't think they did, and I'm glad that they were able to change those after all this, but I can't put responsibility on them. I think it's just a – horrible side effect of and consequence of the sport that he was involved in, and it's that's not just limited to wrestling. I mean, we're talking about football here as well. When you talk about your concussions and how that can affect your life long term.
Yeah, I think creating a culture where something is possible is one thing. It would be something else if they were pushing these things on individuals. So I'm not sure that they bear responsibility, but I think it's. It was vital for them to make some changes, and it looks like they've done that. Do you think that he should be completely wiped away from everything like he is? Do you think there's no trace of Chris Benoit anywhere with WWE?
I don't know. When I heard you say that, I did not know that. I did not know that you couldn't even search for him on the WWE app. So I think that's a little odd. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. And I guess that's about the murder piece, and I don't know. Like, I feel like if you're going to have somebody who commits major crimes and you want to remove that name for it, that you can do it. I just feel like we usually don't attribute major crimes like this to one person. For example, O.J. Simpson is in the Football Hall of Fame. Now, he was found not guilty of murders. He's been found guilty of a lot of other crap, too, though. So I guess I'm okay with it. I wouldn't argue against it. I also wouldn't be upset if I could search his name and find some stuff based on just his wrestling performances. But I guess I get it, so I really have no objection.
I may catch some heat for this, but I told you off the air when we were driving here that it's so tragic I almost feel sorry for the guy. I don't feel sorry for him in regards to, you know, what he did was inexcusable, and I do think I do think that he should have been held accountable if he wouldn't have ended his life. But, you know, he had brain injury that was a result of what he did for a living. And I don't know, I think there's some science behind this that you and I are probably aren't smart enough to talk about and really know what we're talking about. But I think he was injured. I think he was mentally not the person he used to be. So there's a tragic component that I just hate that his life had to end that way. I hate that he took two other lives, but I think that there's some stuff that we can take away from this and move forward on. And it's really taking our mental health seriously. It's taking concussion protocol seriously. You know, that's a big thing in a lot of sports right now.
And part of that in football right now is because of Chris Benoit and others, and for it to show that consistent head injuries can lead to changing who you are. And that's why, I mean, it's more apparent in football now because wrestling was, for the most part, able to just kind of wipe away a lot of their problems by changing the chair shots and things like that. But I don't think there's justice to be had here. He ended his own life. Obviously, it wasn't. There was no justice that was able to be administered. I know it's a question we usually get into, but this is certainly tragic. Like you said at the beginning, this is professional wrestling was one of my favorite things growing up. I'm enjoying watching my son get into it now, but to look at a case like this and to know that wrestling had a role in him becoming who he was that did this, and also how this impacted the future of the sport, I think historically is just something interesting to look at. So I've enjoyed rereading this, nostalgically rereading some of the other names of wrestlers, and looking back at Stu Hart's dungeon and researching that a little bit. It was a lot of fun for me. But
I felt like I was in the room with 12-year-old Jamie. I mean, the joy on his face, I hadn't seen that in a long time. So I wish this was recorded so you could see that.
Maybe next time. Maybe there's some videos of me attending a wrestling event in Kaywood High School when Smoky Mountain Wrestling would come around when I was little, and the tag team, my favorite tag team, the Rock and Roll Express, was there. That was good times.
You're such a nerd.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Guys, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, like, share, rate, review, retweet, all those other computer words.
Check us out on Patreon. We have a lot of fun over there. You do not want to miss out on that. Until next crime, this has been True Crimecast.
You've listened to True Crimecast, distributed by Stoveleg Media.